Welcome to season 4 of the Brave Writer podcast, A Brave Writer's Life in Brief. I'm Julie Bogart, your host. This season, we are releasing via audio our most popular YouTube broadcasts. We're so excited that you can now listen to these on audio while you're running, driving in the car, or folding laundry. We will also sprinkle throughout this season original content, interviews with people I think are compelling to listen to. If you get a chance, please help us out by leaving a review at iTunes or Stitcher or wherever you listen to Brave Writers podcast. We really appreciate it. It helps us get the word out, and it also gratifies all the people behind the scenes who work so hard to bring these to you for free. And now, let's get going with this episode. I worked as a professional writer, copy editor, ghostwriter, and magazine editor and contributor before I started Brave Writer. I had the good fortune of being in the homeschooling community and having friends who knew about my writing life, my professional writing life. I wasn't actually using any curricula with my kids to teach writing. I didn't feel the need for it. I was using books that I had already understood and known from my own writing life. Well, I had some of my friends ask me if I would teach their kids and them how to teach writing. They said they were having struggles using the writing manuals that they had purchased at homeschool conventions or that friends had suggested. So I said, sure. And for 7 weeks, we met during a Sunday school class period at our local church, and I taught parents and teachers how to teach writing. Now, full confession, I assumed they'd be bored after 2 sessions. I actually thought that everything I was going to say were the things they already expected to hear about writing. They just needed a little extra encouragement. What came back to me in that very first session startled me. These parents acted like I was sharing information they had never heard before, and I didn't expect that. So after the first session, I asked one of my friends, the one who asked me to start this little workshop, what are you using to teach writing? She handed me a book. I'm not going to out the name of the curriculum, but this is a long time ago. So we're talking, gosh, now 20 years ago. And she handed me the book, and I opened it up. And on the first page, it was teaching how to teach the paragraph. And at the top of the page was a paragraph. And so I read their sample. And then I handed the book to my friend and I said, have you read this paragraph? And she said, yes. And I said, do you like reading it? And she said, well, what do you mean? I said, do you like this paragraph? Do you wish you knew what came after this paragraph? And she said, well, no. I said, then this isn't a good writing program. Let's just put it away right now. If the sample paragraph in the book teaching writing isn't compelling enough to make you want to read a second paragraph, why would we want our kids to produce paragraphs like this one? And she paused and she said, I never thought about it. I thought this was correct writing. I said, if correct writing isn't interesting to read, it's not correct writing. There is a lot of writing in school that gets an A, but that isn't good writing, that no one would pay to read, no one would stay on the blog if they read it. So what we want to start with is liveliness in writing, reader engaging writing. And yes, that's also true for academic writing. We're not just talking about conversational writing or casual writing or internet writing. Academic writing at its best should compel the reader. That is its number one job. So even if we're talking about the ship-shaped goals of academic and research-based writing, the best writers make their readers want to keep writing. Want to keep reading. And so that's what we're looking at today. What are these myths that we keep perpetuating and keep producing inside of our manuals, and yet are not liberating writers to be effective writers? So let's get started. All right. So 6 Mythbusters. Ready? Number one. The number one myth about writing is this. This is the most common, most popular. Ready? Mechanics first, writing second. Some educators and some writing instructors talk about writing like it's a foreign language, or maybe learning how to play a musical instrument, or discovering how to be a part of a sport you've never played. They treat writing like it is foreign to children, and they have to be immersed in some kind of safe environment for learning how to express themselves in writing. So what they assume is this: if a child has good mechanics, they can spell, they can handwrite, they can punctuate, if they know the basic structure of a paragraph, then they should be able to write freely and easily. So there is a belief that the writing is dependent on accurate mechanics. So if we just teach the mechanics first, our kids will be much more capable writers, right? That's the belief at the beginning of the writing experience. But the truth is this: our kids are already fluent English speakers. They already have the writing life inside. We aren't teaching them how to self-express. They've been fluent since age 5. So what we have instead in our young writers is the writing impulse already coursing through their bodies, but they don't yet know how to transcribe it for themselves. People who say mechanics first are focused on the notion that mechanics are writing, as opposed to what's inside. What's inside the person can be written for them if they don't have the mechanics. Think about it this way. If your child, for some reason, God forbid, lost their capacity to use their hands and couldn't use their eyes, they could still be writers as long as somebody else wrote it for them. So the initial idea that mechanics are required before you can start writing is erroneous. Pleasure in writing doesn't come from accurate mechanics. Pleasure in writing doesn't come from imitation. Pleasure in writing comes from the sense that I had something unique to say, and it came out of me and was known by an audience. That's where it comes from. Think of your children speaking to you while you're at the dinner table. What you have is a child who's excited to share, not someone who is nervous about getting their words out. But pleasure comes from self-expression, not spelling, not punctuation. For your kids who are struggling with spelling and punctuation, if they feel inferior in their self-expression because those aren't accurate, usually that impression has come from a curriculum or unwittingly from a parent or from a co-op leader. What we want to liberate our children to discover is that the mechanics are one aspect of automaticity, being able to transcribe your own thoughts, but it is unrelated to original writing, the part of the child that is self-expression. So that is the very first principle that I want you to remember. So the first thing you can do for a child who needs liberation is to jot down their words for them. Jot it down. Make sure that they know that you value the life that lives inside of them and that it deserves representation on paper. In other words, you are not going to wait for them to learn to spell or to handwrite before they get to experience the pleasure of their own words being contained on paper. We want them to have the experience that what's being written is worthy of paper. So that's the first thing you can do. Jot it down, okay? Okay, number two. This myth I know you've all heard because even professionals say it, but I'm going to explain why I think it's a myth. Ready? Okay, here we go. Myth number two, write every day. How many of you have heard that one? Write every day. I know you have, because I was told it. So many people have told me, write every day. And of course, there are morning pages by Julia Cameron. She suggests that. And Natalie Goldberg, one of my heroes, talks about writing every day. You know what? Write every day if you want to be a professional writer. Write every day if writing is your vocation, but not if you're learning to write. And in fact, what do we mean by writing every day? I do not do original, generative, from scratch writing every day. I revise, I write emails, I do blogs, I communicate. I don't always do the kind of writing we think write every day means when we're talking about kids, and I'm a pro. I'm a person who can put thousands of words on a page in a day. What I say instead is engage writing every day. But the vast majority of human beings, kids and adults, benefit from what I call engaging writing every day. We're not talking about putting original thoughts down. One day might be revision. Another day might be copying. Another day might be reading writing. Another day might simply be getting out in the world of ideas so that your brain has a break and a chance to sort of digest and think about a beautiful idea, a moving experience, a new set of vocabulary words learned because you were on a field trip. What we want to do then is engage vocabulary, engage writing every day. But you don't have to start from scratch every day. I found this little quote that I kind of liked. Every student, every day, read, write, think, imagine, dream, discuss, create, share. Now, these, I would not do every single one of these every day. I would do a couple of these every day. Make sure these are happening on a regular basis. Does that make sense? We're not talking about starting from scratch every morning facing the blank page. I don't even want to do that, and I'm a pro. It's hard to face a blank screen and a blank page. Deep writing experiences teach so much. It's why we only recommend one writing project a month. You need a week to at least spend time in the material, saturating in it. You need another week to free write all different aspects, maybe one day about one aspect and then another day about another aspect. And you sort of stitch together all these free writes by the end of the week. And then you need a week of revision. You can't revise in a day. You need to play with the ideas, to come to them and walk away from them, to add a few words here or there. And then finally, on the last week, when you've kind of recomposed all those pieces, now you're going to do what we call the mechanics mock-up. You're going to edit the piece, look for spelling and punctuation errors. That takes a month. That's writing every day without original writing every day. Okay? Good job. Third one. Ready? I wonder if you've heard this one. Kids prefer imagination to facts in writing. How many of you have seen those writing prompt books for kids that are all about, you know, the alien who landed from Mars on our school campus and entered the, you know, lunchroom? Has anyone seen those? This is a very common school way to get kids to write. It's this idea that they have such big imaginations. If we just let them use their imagination, they'll love to write. Okay, that is not what we have found to be true. Here's the truth about writing for everyone who's learning how. You start with the real. You start with what you know. It's one thing to let your imagination run or to put on dress-up clothes and play a game. It's another to commit those words to paper. That is a much more challenging experience. So what we want our kids to have confidence doing is drawing on their most direct experience and their deepest vocabulary. Their best vocabulary comes from what they know really, 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 really well. What they know really, 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 really well? Their personal experiences. Interestingly, composition classes, that Composition 101 at college, they start with the autobiographical narrative as the first essay in almost every one of those classes across the country. They don't start with an academic topic. They don't start with reviewing literature. They start with the student in the seat, and they teach them how to self-express through looking at their own lives and finding the themes that they want to write about. This is how it works, not just at the 8-year-old level, not just at the 12-year-old level, but at the college level. Isn't that fascinating? So I want you to have permission. It's okay if your kids are writing about daily observations, the game they play, the stuff they know how to do. And in fact, boys often are asked by well-meaning mothers, how do you feel about spring? What do you feel about the game you played? When really what they want to tell you is information. You know, these are the weapons I had to use to kill the bad guys to get to level 3. They want to give you information. And even asking for feelings from girls is not always successful. You might get feeling words, but then you get no detail. So they might say, I love spring. It's so beautiful. I love flowers. It feels so good to be outdoors. And you're like, that didn't tell me what I wanted to know about spring. So I recommend never asking feeling questions in writing. Ask specific observation questions, things that elicit detail. How does it look from above? How does it look from below? What color do we compare this to in this set of Crayolas? What color is burnt sienna? Does it match, you know, this color we're looking at on the pine cone? That's the way you help draw them out. Get facts. When you were running on the soccer field and about to score the goal, which foot did you use to kick? Who was near you? What happened when the wind was rushing by your ears? Did you hear a sound? These are the ways we pull out the experience that's invisible to them, but is lodged inside their bodies. Even fiction benefits from a strong foundation in facts. And you know why? Because fantasy depends on a very strong comprehension of the natural world so that when people read your fantasy, they can relate to it and it is believable. So fantasy and fiction are a very high level of writing, and it requires that you be very careful in your own production. The only way to get there is to become very comfortable with the factual life you're already living. If you think about books like Harry Potter or the Narnia Chronicles, the reason we enjoy them so much isn't that they're pure fantasy. It's that within the realm of fantasy, all these touch points are so well established that we understand. So then when we do something with fantasy, it's like, oh, but I'm rooted here. I understand drinking tea and being afraid and what trees look like. Do you see? So start first with facts.
You're listening to the Brave Writer Podcast. I'm Julie Bogart. Thanks so much for listening along. Did you know that you can leave us a review on iTunes or Stitcher or any place that you listen to this podcast? Reviews are the way that we get the word out to others, and they mean the world to me. So if you wouldn't mind reviewing this podcast, if you haven't done so yet, I'd really appreciate it. You can always click on a link from our blog to go there directly, or you can simply go there on the app itself. Thanks a lot. And now let's get back to the podcast.
All right, number 4, the incremental approach through formats is not a good strategy for teaching writing. The incremental approach through formats is not a good strategy for writing. Now, this sounds so backwards. Literally, this is how every program teaches writing. And I want to make a case, an apologetic, as it were, for why I totally disagree with that strategy. Now, here's the thing. I get a lot of parents who come to me from this approach, and they have found enormous comfort in it. And the last thing I will ever do is take away comfort from a happy parent. So if you're the person who has been using a systematic approach and it has been giving you security and comfort, well, good for you. Good for you. You found something that gave you security and comfort in the sea of uncertainty that homeschooling is. So no problem. And are formats at some point important in a student's life, in a writer's life? Absolutely. Here's the thing. I'm about writing voice first. Some people say we can teach the formats, and once kids feel secure in the format, Now we can let them bring their voice in and they'll have this lovely marriage where they have the sturdy support of the format and now they feel permission to explore their voices. That's the thinking. And it's not irrational. You can hear that information and think this really makes sense. You know, yes, I couldn't speak to my friends in a foreign language until I understood the basis. But here's why it isn't good thinking in the end. And here's why I know it's true, what I'm about to tell you. The writing life has to start with voice. It has to. Because once you've started down the path of formats, you have decided that the communication you want to give is external to you. It's as though you are saying, what I need is out there. It's not located in here. And kids who get in the habit early on of thinking writing is about formats find it harder to take risks in self-expression. And I've seen it. I can spot certain styles of writing at 10 paces. I read their formats and I want their voices. The college community right now around writing, their biggest complaint about most high school writing programs isn't that these kids don't know how to write formats. It's that that's all they know how to write. They don't understand how to access their interiors. So here's what happens. Our homeschooled kids who've been raised on great books, rich conversation, and in many cases, the freedom of self-expression come in and they may not even have great formats. And the professors are like, but I loved your writing. We hear this over and over and over again. For kids who have been raised on formats and are in a homeschool context, you can easily bring in writing voice right now. I'm not saying you should feel behind. I'm saying all you want to do now is add a great, big, open, generous space for writing voice. I want you to expand the context. Instead of just doing formats, make room for play. Give them the opportunity to self-express in a variety of ways. You might suggest that they free write using a totally different voice, like they're trying to be really elegant and sophisticated. And then the next time, like someone throwing a tantrum, they can try the difference between ranting and self-restraint. Help them explode out of their habits of expression into new experiences. So they start to access more parts of themselves. And just as a little 2-cent reminder, kids who are active on the internet tend to be my favorite writers. They are so used to writing for an audience that they start to understand reader impact, which is what writing's all about. So one of the things we're looking for here is the exploration of reader impact and playing with language and creating surprise and suspense and mystery. And that's just as true in academic writing. Surprising facts, surprising data, surprising expert opinion, a new twist on an old understood topic. That's what they're looking for at the university level. All right, number 5, know thy audience first. Myth number 5, it's good to know who you're writing for, but should you know it before you pick up the pen? In most writing programs, that's what we're told. Before you pick up the pen, know who you're writing for. Now, here's the thing. If we're writing a letter to grandparents, we do want to think about the grandparents. Do they know our hip-hop artists that we're fans of? Maybe not. So if we say, I love Kanye West, thanks for the CD, they might not know who he is. It might be worth it to explain that this is who this person is and why you like him. If you're writing the same letter to a buddy, you don't need to do all that. So in that way, knowing your audience first can be beneficial. On the other hand, a lot of times it's beneficial to simply write for yourself. And I like to urge young writers to start with themselves. Because if you write for your own pleasure, you start to access all the pieces of yourself that make great writing, your sense of humor, your insights that impress you. This is what makes great writers. This is why people who love writing write so much. They're getting a kick out of listening to themselves talk on paper. They're discovering what they think by writing. So if you start without having to think too much about audience, you get to all that information. During the revision stage, you can start thinking, well, now what shape should this writing be in? Who is it really meant for? Are there pieces that are not appropriate for the audience I'm considering? That's when we think about audience. But in that initial rush, when you're first working on a paper, so what about a high school student who has to write an essay? Should you think about the school teacher who's going to read it? You know, this lady? I mean, I don't want to think about her while I'm writing my school papers. That's just intimidating. When I was in my graduate program, we had a final due that was supposed to be these multiple essays related to these specific prompts, but we had been taught certain forms in ancient literature. And I decided to do all of my work in this final based on each form. I'm not going to tell you what they are because they're theological terms, but they were each different styles of engagement. And I wrote my responses using those forms. One of them was actually like an imprecatory psalm, in fact. And my instructor wrote at the end that it was refreshing to have someone internalize the ideas and express them in vibrant new ways. I share this with you because we're so focused on cookie cutter products when the world is craving innovators. I'm not saying to not teach mechanics. Please don't hear me saying that. What I'm saying is they are a tool in service of writing voice, not the other way around. The mechanics are a tool in service of writing voice. And knowing how to marshal the mechanics and the formats are so important, but not at the expense of insight, idea generation, vocabulary, and that sense of strength that comes from really knowing I have something worth saying and I'm going to risk saying it. Good. Okay. The last one then, and to me, this is the sixth myth, but the most absurd of the whole bunch. And maybe we'll go back through all five leading up to it first. So the very first one was this: mechanics first, writing second. Kapow. No, you start with the writing life first. Mechanics can be taught using someone else's writing. Copy work and dictation. Second myth, write every day. Bam. We want instead to engage writing every day. Read it, play with it, watch television and listen to it. Okay, number three, kids prefer imagination to facts in writing. Nope. Kids prefer writing about what they know well, just like the pros. Start with what you know. It's a great, great principle for kids. Number four, the incremental approach through formats. Zap it. Start with writing voice and bring in formats as they get comfortable with their own self-expression. And then number five was know thy audience first. Actually, no. Write for yourself and then decide who the audience is. Okay, so that's one through five. Number six, ready? And I think some of you may unwittingly believe this one. If you hate writing, write more. Okay, so if you hate writing, write more. How many of you have believed that? That maybe your kids would just like it better if they wrote more? Now that you've heard all six, don't you just feel like this oppressive feeling on top of you? You're like, why did I do this to my kids? Here's the thing. Anyone who's struggling needs support. They need help. They need a partner. They need an incentive to struggle. They need a context that is safe for risk-taking and that creates a sense of community around the struggle. Does that make sense? So I want you to just think about that for a minute. As you are preparing to write with your kids and you know someone hates it, I want you to just think for a minute, well, what could I do to provide scaffolding? We don't want to leave our kids hanging out here. We want to pull them up to safety where we are. And the way we do that is being partners to them. We do it through support. And of course, I've shared many times that you can certainly make brownies, rub shoulders, write at the same time. Let your child talk while you handwrite for them. Your child writes one sentence, you write the next one. Your child writes a sentence, you write the next one. Another strategy, have the child talk, you take notes, hand them the notes and say, just write, follow the notes. Each one of these two-word things, write as much as you can remember about this two-word key. And now go to the next one and don't worry about format. Don't worry about paragraphing. Just get the words out. This is how you create partnership with your child. This is how you move from write more to let's actually get some writing done. Let's actually make this happen. Does that make sense? So Brave Writer exists to foster writing voice, to help you become the coach and ally you want to be to your kids, and to help your kids get in touch with the feeling that they have something of worth to say and that it deserves, you know, to be written down and shared with an interested audience. That's what we're about. And that's what I hope you're about. Your kids are brilliant. I read their writing. We've taught something like 15,000 or more families. What's happening in our classes and what happens when people are hanging around the Brave Writer world is they catch a vision for what it can be to be a writer. It can be this really exciting space where you get to know what you think. You get to access all your insights, all the great thoughts you think you have that nobody knows, and put them somewhere to share with an interested audience. When Liam was 4, he used to make these little Lego men, and they each had superpowers because he was all about, you know, Pokemon and Yu-Gi-Oh. And one day I realized, oh my gosh, I can't keep track of all these. So I got a clipboard and I wrote down on the clipboard the name of each Lego man. I asked him for each superpower. We determined how many points each of these super kicks were worth when they were defeating each other. All of this was on a clipboard. He couldn't read. He couldn't write. He was 4. He carried the clipboard around for a month. He memorized or somehow associated what he was looking at with the correct names because the correct Lego men always stood on top of the correct names every time. I still have the sheet from when he was 4 that I wrote down. For Liam, that was the beginning of his writing life. He got to experience having his thought life valued so much, it made it to an official looking clipboard and he could carry it around and share it with others. When Johanna was 12 and I was out for the evening, my husband and I were returning from a meeting. Johanna met us at the front door. Her younger sister was 5 at the time, Katrin, and she had a clipboard and she said, Mom, Katrin wrote her first story. I said, well, she doesn't write or read yet. And she says, I know. I was putting her to bed and she started to tell me a story. So I got a clipboard and I wrote it down. Can I read it to you? So she did. Her handwriting was a mess. Capitals everywhere, misspelled words. The words were sloping down this empty page. But you know what? Johanna took a risk to record her sister's story to share it with the most interested audience she could find, Katrin's parents. And we still have that story. I still have it in my book of things that I will never, ever get rid of. And you know what? Her spelling and punctuation is adorable. I'm so glad I have a record of it at age 12, when so many of you are worried that your kids should have beautiful spelling. This is what I'm talking about when I'm talking about writing. I'm not just trying to get your kids ready for college, although that is definitely a Brave Writer goal, but we get them there so much more memorably and satisfyingly when our kids feel like what they have to say deserves to be on the printed page. And that they have the skills and tools to access their interiors and analyze information and bring it forth in a way that's meaningful to them. We want them to take writing risks. We want them to not feel confined to the voice of someone else who tells them what should and shouldn't be on the page. So much of school teaching has ruined generations of writers. You know how I know? Because parents write me without any confidence in their own writing skills every day. Think about how many of you look back at high school and today you still feel unconfident. You still feel like you're not really a good writer. So let's not reproduce that same experience in our kids. Let's give them a better option. Let's help them get to a place where writing is not this, you know, self-alienating experience. We want them to experience writing the way they experience speech, which is, it's available to me and I'm fluent in it.
That's it for today. I hope you found some ideas you can implement even this week. I'd love to hear from you. Follow me on Instagram at Julie Brave Writer, or you can follow us on Facebook, facebook.com/Brave Writer. In the meantime, live honestly, write bravely. I'm Julie Bogart from Brave Writer.